This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from St. John's Books, North Portland's full-service independent bookstore, offering new and used books on progressive politics, literature, poetry, titles for kids, and more. St. John's Books is located at 8622 North Lombard in St. John's. Information at 503-283-0032. And it's also been made possible in part by Oregon Children's Theater, presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices in his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay, tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org. Now, it's time for Stage and Studio. This is KBOO Portland. We're presenting a Hearing Voices special to celebrate Valentine's Day. This is the second half hour of a one-hour special.
Welcome back to the Hearing Voices special, Love's Labors. I'm Amy Dickinson, and this is David Greenberger and Three Leg Torso from their CD, Whispers, Grins, Blood Loss, and Handshakes. David Greenberger talks to elderly people. He collects their stories. This one was told to him by James Rivietto.
My mother was a lovely woman, She says to me, Jim, where's your girlfriend? I didn't have any girlfriend. I was busy taking care of her, you know. I said, you're my girlfriend. Oh, come on, get a girlfriend. My three sisters, they're all married, and one more brother, he was married too. She says, get yourself a girlfriend. I said, all right, I will. So finally, I got a girlfriend. I brought her to the house. Mom said, Jim, when are you going to get married? I said, wait a minute. Wait a second. So anyway, she asked me I don't know how many times, and finally I said, Mommy, January 15th, 1940, I'm going to get married. Oh, good, 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 she said. A month before that time, she passed away. Couldn't even come to the wedding. Can you imagine that? I'm telling you honestly. So I had the reception, but nothing to drink, just the food, that's all. No music or nothing, that's my life.
So I'm an advice columnist. Ask Amy, that's me. A lot of the mail that comes to me concerns weddings. Weddings seem to bring out the worst in some people. They fight and carry on over trivial things. And even though it's annoying, I understand it. Couples are trying to create a moment that will become a memory that will last for the rest of their lives. After the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center were brought down by a terrorist attack, radio producers The Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, collected stories of weddings made memorable, not just because of the marriages that happened, but because of where they happened.
Message 27 was received at 1:20 p.m. Friday.
Hi, my name is Bob Krutzel. My wife Barbara and I were married at Windows on the World on October 9th, 1976. The only sound recording we have of that event is us taking our wedding vows.
We kept that tape in a safe deposit box for 20 years. My name is Bob Krutzel. Barbara and I were married at Windows on the World. That was the 107th floor of the World Trade Center.
I did always imagine myself getting married in a church. I was raised Italian Catholic, and Bob is Russian Jewish. It was a tense situation. My parents and my brother weren't coming.
Both families got together at a restaurant. This is 3 years earlier. And we were talking about who would go first. Would it be a priest or the rabbi? And I just basically said, I've had enough. And so we decided that we would make all the arrangements. We're getting married. Would you like to come? And lo and behold, everybody said, sure.
Barbara and Bob asked you here today to help them celebrate a very happy occasion. It is the day they have chosen to make public at this ceremony.
The World Trade Center was pretty new then. And I thought that would impress him very much to get married at Windows on the World.
The view would just take your breath away, especially from their what they call their hors d'oeuvre.
It was 1976, and we wrote our own ceremony and our own vows. That was very popular then. And we had Color My World was our wedding song.
Yeah, the group Chicago, Color My World. As time goes by, I realize just what you mean.
I wore a dress that was a peasant style, and on my head I wore just a little chapel veil. We drove there in Bob's little Pinto, and it was pouring rain and the winds were howling.
Kali Ojibwe echoes these sentiments in his book, The Prophet.
We took with us a handheld tape recorder. We had patterned part of the ceremony on some of the thoughts of Khalil Gibran, how the cypress and the oak do not grow in each other's shadow.
I'm looking at my wedding album now, and when we got married, there were a lot of doubts about how, you know, how long we would last. I said to my husband on our 25th wedding anniversary that we lasted longer than the World Trade Center. I thought that was kind of ironic. It was devastating.
Message 2 was received at 3:10 p.m. December 4th.
Hello, my name is James Burton. My wife and I were married at the Top of the World observation deck on February 14, 1998. They were looking for 55 couples who wanted to get married at the World Trade Center. 55 couples, 110 people to match with 110 stories of the building.
If there was in the background, such a thing as a wish come true.
I am Mrs. Vanessa Johnson.
I would wish.
He's always singing around the house. That's like our song.
Love.
I used to come through the World Trade Center every morning on my way to work, and I would take the PATH train of World Trade, and when you come up the escalators, those long escalators in World Trade Center, there was electronic billboard, and it said, get married on top of the world, Valentine's Day. I wrote an essay, emailed it over. By 2 o'clock, I got a response saying, you know, congratulations. I was so happy, and it wasn't until later on in the day that I realized I had to tell John that we were going to get married in 6 days. Whenever we have an argument, he's the one that came up with, whenever we see the World Trade Center, we have to kiss, no matter what. And at first, it was like, oh, man, I'm upset. I don't want to give you a kiss. Sometime we would be somewhere out in Jersey, and you'd look up on the turnpike or something, and there's a World Trade Center, and we're sitting in the car, not speaking, ignoring each other. But because we see them now, I have to give them a kiss, and then, you know, we kind of laugh, and it was something that put us back on track when we couldn't get on track, you know, on our own.
I want to welcome you to the World Trade Center. I'm Judge Frederick Berman. And it's my pleasure to be able to...
I'm Judge Frederick Berman. For many years, I've had the pleasure and privilege of performing weddings on Valentine's Day atop the World Trade Center. We did 3 an hour, every 20 minutes. They would put ads in papers around the country and abroad saying, if you are interested in getting married atop the World Trade Center on Valentine's Day, write us a letter and tell us why you would like to do it. The weddings that I actually performed, I have copies of those letters so that I could personalize each of the ceremonies. The top cards are my notes. They met at the World Trade Center 2 years ago. He works in the food and beverage department.
My name is Enrique Mejia, and I work in the food and beverage department. I wrote that I just couldn't see myself getting married nowhere else but up here.
I was working downstairs as a tour guide. He was working up here. So it's like everything happened here. We got engaged last year, about Valentine's. He called me over to the window to see the view, and then he just popped the question, and everybody from the food and beverage came with wine glasses and just started celebrating it.
My family's in Jersey, so my mother's talking about she's scared of Vegas, so... She wasn't coming. Her family's the same thing. They're scared of elevators, the heights. So we told them 107th floor. They was like, no, no, that's all right. When you finish, come see us.
Brenda and Enrique, I want to welcome you to this wonderful day.
Hello, my name is Carmen Garcia. I am 53 years old. I live by myself. My husband left me 2 years ago for a 23-year-old woman. About 7 months ago, I met a wonderful, caring man. His name is Orlando Alvarado, and he is 65 years old. He looks after me and takes me to the hospital when I'm sick, something that my ex-husband never did in 36 years of marriage. When we met, it was love at first sight, and we know we want to spend the rest of our life together. Thank you, Carmen Garcia. My name is Angela Duraldi, and I'm Carmen Garcia's daughter.
Carmen Garcia del Barato.
Bueno, yo soy de Ecuador.
They are from Ecuador.
Yo me gané un premio.
When the priest married them, he said, okay, we have a surprise for three couples. They felt that the letter that she wrote, they deserved the first prize. They said, okay, congratulations, you have won a trip to Morocco. And they were like, what? You know, we didn't expect this. Being to the fact that they couldn't travel because it was a family matter, they didn't go, so they gave them tickets to a Broadway show.
I'm Michael Drinkard. My wife and I, Jill Eisenstadt, got married in the World Trade Tower, August 25th, 1990. In 1990, it was before the first blast, and so there was parking down in the basement. I remember Jill's father was, he really wanted us to get married in the World Trade Towers because there was parking.
Jill and Michael, I know that both of you met in the Columbia graduate program. You're both accomplished writers.
We really knew we wanted to get married someplace that had meaning, and we wanted to get married in Manhattan where we met, and a lot of our dreams came true. So, I mean, I never really had any love for them as being beautiful in themselves, but just because they were just the biggest things around and lit up and somehow seemed to follow us around in some way. And there was two of them and two of us. I don't know, they just represented dreaming big and there being the possibility that things could happen.
Message 3.
My name is Bill McDonald. I proposed to my wife in 1985 on top of the World Trade Center. And I prepared on a landfill diagonally across from the South Tower toward the Hudson River, approximately 100 luminarias in the shape of the Christian symbol of marriage, which is a cross with two interlocking circles. Lit them, met my wife for a surprise date, and my girlfriend.
I am Sunita S. Mukhi. The wedding at the World Trade Center was really perfect for the flamboyance of both our personalities. And I think even poetically, it appealed to me because, you know, he and I were both from different parts of the world. And the World Trade Center seemed to be, it's a good international symbol of cultures coming together. He is from Singapore, and we had an email correspondence, very old-fashioned type of romantic letter writing. I had prepared this ceremony, which I felt would be quite symbolic of what I wanted for us to experience in our marriage, and I combined things that I knew from Christian weddings and Hindu weddings. I was wearing my mother's red silk sari that she had used for her engagement, and then I fed him sweets to sweeten our lives. It's making me very sad, actually, to tell you that though we had a very good start at the World Trade Center, at this point, he and I are not together anymore. And it is surprising that this relationship really saw its termination when the World Trade Center collapsed, you know, in September 11. Then that was when he and I really felt that the relationship was over. You know, the World Trade Center crumbling to the ground, besides it being a tragedy of world proportions, it's also a very personal loss of a dream.
There is one particular wedding that I officiated up there several years ago that will always stay with me. My name is Pastor Alan Ramirez, and I was struck by this particular couple because they were homeless. Apparently they were already married, but they decided to be married again. And I remember them saying, when we were married, we were both homeless. We were out on the streets. We just went to City Hall. There was nobody there. And she said it was as if we didn't belong to anyone. There was no family. There were no friends. And as she stood up there on top of the World Trade Center, she said to me, we wanted to come up here because by coming up here, we'll be on top of the world. And in essence, now we belong to everyone.
The Kitchen Sisters from their Sonic Memorial Project, mixed by Barney Jones of Earwax Productions. I've been to a lot of weddings. Well, one day I witnessed 2,500 of them, a mass wedding sponsored by the Unification Church in D.C. The blessed event was held at a football stadium. Call me a hopeless romantic. Tell me I'm in love with love. Or brand me a hapless divorcee and feel sorry for me. Whatever. I just love a wedding. Mainly, I like my own weddings, so forgive me for trying to get in on a good thing. I thought this would be the perfect occasion to say, I do. The room was booked, there was music, clergy, and thousands of invited guests. All I needed was a groom.
Hello, Michael?
Speaking.
Hey, it's Amy.
Amy.
Amy Dickinson.
Amy.
Yeah.
It's been years. What's up?
Well, I was wondering if you would maybe want to go to this thing with me.
What kind of thing?
Well, you know, it's a it's a wedding.
Amy, I don't think I have the right shoes.
Oh.
Hello, yes?
It's Amy.
Hi, Amy. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Listen, I have this thing I want to go to, and I was wondering if maybe you'd like to come.
Well, I'd have to check with my wife, but...
You got married?
Oh, I didn't tell you that?
Oh, I had no idea. Do you guys get along?
Hello, Kevin Blyer.
Hey, Kevin?
Yes?
It's Amy. Amy Dickinson.
By the time I got to my seat on the 30-yard line, the bridal couples were already on the field, sitting on folding chairs that stretched all the way from the 10-yard line to the end zone of the opposing side. The grooms wore black. They were seated next to their betrothed, the brides, and more brides. Guess I wasn't the only girl without a date. Turns out this wedding was lousy with brides, like several hundred extra. The brides sat quietly next to each other in their own quadrant of the football field, pretty in their poofy white dresses and matching veils. They carried stiff bouquets of plastic flowers, like identical wedding cake dolls. I couldn't take my eyes off them. Reverend Sung Young Moon and his wife, Mrs. Moon, walked down a wide staircase onto a large stage. They wore golden crowns, the kind kings and queens wear in storybook kingdoms. The blessings were said in Korean. About 2,000 brides and 2,000 grooms exchanged rings. That's when the extra brides looked down, rummaged in their coats and purses, and got busy in the way people do when they're embarrassed and being watched. The brides put rings onto their own fingers and then laid their hands in their laps. After the ceremony, the brides and grooms and brides stood up and milled around the football field. An announcement came over the PA system. If you can't find your spouse, it said, please proceed to the spouse locator service at the left-hand side of the stage. The Unification Church had provided the lonely brides with framed 8x10 photos of their husbands, who were mostly from other countries and couldn't make it to the ceremony. They carried their husbands' pictures around like door prizes at a banquet. I left the field with the leftover brides and went into the stadium. And that's when I saw them. The lines to the ladies' rooms. Every bathroom at the stadium had a queue of brides curving along the wall, the way they do at rock concerts or playoff games. I counted 53 brides in one line. They carried the pictures of their new husbands and wore winter coats over their gowns. I joined up with them, all of us, spouseless. Our line moved pretty slowly, the way these things do. The bride started to get antsy, shifting from foot to foot, eager to start their new lives, or get into the bathroom.
Dear Amy, my parents fight a lot. Sometimes it scares me and my sisters. Last week, my sister sat on my lap, crying until we could go to our grandparents' house. I don't know what to say to my mom and dad. They seem not to worry about anything, but I do. The main interpreters of marriage, the primary witnesses to the union, are the kids. Scott Carrier's daughter, Jessie, is a witness to her parents' marriage, and she's a pretty accurate reporter.
You know how Mom and I met?
It's a hard thing to think about.
Why?
Because it's... I usually don't pay much attention to what you and Mom are doing between each other, but kind of I do. And I don't really wonder anything. I don't think that there's something that I don't know that I really want to know, like a mystery or anything.
I'd seen her dance the night before in front of a small audience downtown, and her style was wrapped around the idea, her idea, that she really weighed nothing at all, and that her body was only there to tell little jokes, her little jokes, whatever might come to mind. I asked her if she liked my house, and she said she liked the view. She asked me what I thought about her concert, and I said I thought it was funny. She said, "Funny? Only funny?" "Funny and beautiful," I said. And she said, "That's better." Do you think Hillary and I are in love?
Yeah. I mean, you... You know, because you sometimes have fights. I think people who love each other have to have fights sometimes, otherwise they don't understand each other very well. Like, they might... Not everybody is exactly the same, and so people might disagree about something, but two people who love each other have to understand each other, and to understand each other, they have to know what they're thinking.
Up until this time, I'd been living alone and was not unhappy. I had a house and a dog and a car, no job, no need for a job. I had money from the National Endowment for the Arts to produce a radio story about chasing antelope, which, as far as I could tell, only required a wholehearted effort to live as much like a primitive hunter as possible. It was a problem I was working on by myself, and really, I had no idea how to go about it, other than by trying to live simply and by trying to stay outside and cover as much ground as possible. But there she was, finally arrived, come to stay.
When you get married, you ever thought about getting married?
Not really, not much.
You haven't thought about it at all? You never thought, well, when I get married, it'll be like this? Or...
No, I never thought, like, when I get married, I will have, or it will be exactly like this or something like that.
Maybe a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I don't believe we can ever guess the future, or, like, I can hope, but I don't like saying what I want to be when I grow up, because you never know.
She asked me why I only had one fork in the kitchen. I said it was all I needed, and then asked her how many she had in her kitchen. 8, she said, and at least 10 spoons. And I have some glasses, different kinds, even wine glasses. I like to have friends over. I like to cook and have friends over to eat. Don't you have any friends? Yeah, I have a friend, but he doesn't have any hands, I said, looking over at my dog. You know, she said, I've been dreaming about you. I think I'm in love with you.
How do you know she supports me?
She doesn't... Wish, I mean, she doesn't say to us that she regrets that she married you or that, and I mean, not having a job sometimes. And so, she still appreciates what she has.
I went downstairs and brought up the pieces of a wooden bed frame that had been left there by a previous tenant. I had the mattress and everything, and I asked where she'd like to have it. She said, "I like to sit in bed in the morning and drink coffee." So I moved the table and put the bed there in the sunlight. When you get married, if your marriage turns out like our marriage, you know, between your mom and me, mm-hmm. would that be good enough for you, or would you want more than that?
I think it would be fine. I mean, you guys seem pretty happy. And I think that if my marriage, if I got married, was like yours, I would be pretty happy too. And I think I would try to make a little more money. But otherwise, getting along like that, I think that would be, it would be a good marriage.
Recording of the Faimu Washboard Band from Georgia and the Barbie and Ken song you heard earlier are both from Ubu.com's 365 Days project. Carrier's and Nancy Updike's stories are from This American Life, thislife.org. And there's links to works by all the producers in this hour at hearingvoices.com. I'm Amy Dickinson. Hearing Voices specials are supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding.
HearingVoices.com.
Next week, Dee Mae Roberts will be back with Stage and Studio. She will feature Portland Center Stage's The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow. This is KBOO Portland 90.7. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KBOO, Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
I want to say it very clearly. It is because I define myself as an ardent Zionist that thinks that the best for the Jews in Israel is that we abandon the territories and we dismantle settlements and we try to reach a reasonable settlement with our Palestinian partners.
Now, it is correct to say that if you frame everything in terms of what Israel wanted, it made huge concessions. However, if you frame things in terms of what Israel was legally entitled to under international law, then Israel made precisely and exactly zero concessions.
Norman Finkelstein, one of the foremost critics of Israeli policy, debates Shlomo Ben-Ami, a former Israeli foreign minister. What made me more interesting than their disagreements is how much the former Israeli foreign minister agrees with his critic. All that and more coming up.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Haiti, public unrest is growing as the lead of presidential frontrunner René Préval continues to decline. After initial returns gave him over 60% of the vote, Préval's share has fallen below the 50% needed to avoid a runoff vote. Two voting officials have charged Haiti's Electoral Council with manipulation. On Monday, thousands of Préval's supporters took to the streets around the capital of Port-au-Prince. Witnesses said United Nations troops fired into a crowd of unarmed protesters when they refused to let their convoy pass. At least two people were reported killed and another four injured. The Bush administration is on the defensive over Vice President Dick Cheney's shooting of his hunting companion, Republican fundraiser Harry Whittington, at a Texas ranch Saturday. Whittington is reported to be in stable condition. It took the White House at least 19 hours to inform the public, and only after a local Texas newspaper broke the story of the accidental shooting. Cheney's also coming under criticism for violating Texas game law. On Monday, state officials said Cheney had not purchased a stamp required for bird hunting. In other news, the New York Times is reporting the U.S. and Israel are considering a campaign to destabilize the Palestinian Authority so that Palestinians will grow frustrated and force a Hamas-led government to call new elections. According to anonymous U.S. and Israeli officials, one of the main options under consideration is starving the Palestinian Authority of money and aid. In Iran, the government says it's resumed small-scale enrichment of uranium, defying an international effort to limit its nuclear activity. The news comes amid fresh speculation over a possible U.S. attack on Iran. Over the weekend, the Sunday Telegraph reported the Pentagon has drawn up an attack plan as a last resort to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. An anonymous senior Pentagon official said, quote, "This is more than just the standard military contingency assessment. This has taken on much greater urgency in recent months." Back in the United States, the Associated Press is reporting three former associates of indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff says he frequently told them he had strong ties to the White House through senior presidential adviser Karl Rove. On Monday, the White House said Rove considers Abramoff to be a, quote, casual acquaintance. New questions concerning Abramoff's ties to the White House have arisen with the publication of an email in which Abramoff said he had met with President Bush in almost a dozen settings. On Saturday, Time magazine published a photograph of Abramoff attending a White House gathering hosted by President Bush in May 2001. The White House had previously said there was no record of Abramoff attending the event. They've also refused to release several other photos reportedly showing Abramoff with the president. The New York Times is reporting what it calls, quote, one of the biggest giveaways of oil and gas in American history. Under a congressional measure enacted 10 years ago to encourage drilling, energy companies will be allowed to extract about $65 billion worth of oil and natural gas from federal land over the next 5 years without paying taxpayers any royalties. According to the Times, the government will give up over $7 billion in lost royalties over the next 5 years. And finally, a new report from the Government Accountability Office says the Bush administration has spent over $1.6 billion on advertising and public relations contracts in the last 2 years. Of this amount, the Pentagon has been the biggest spender, paying $1.1 billion for recruitment campaigns and other public relations efforts. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.